Hello and welcome to Lush Audio. My name is Charlie Moores and today I'm discussing the development of one of Lush's wonderful spa treatments, the Tales of Bath. Over the next 45 minutes, I'll be talking with musician and producer Richard Evans and musician and healer Caroline Crawley, both of whom live in Bath and created the beautiful soundtrack to the treatment, to poet Toby Thompson, who was born and still lives in Bath and contributes a perfect spoken word composition to that soundtrack, and to Eugenie Couture, a trained ballet dancer and now head spa therapist at Lush's store in Bath, who worked on and now presents the treatment. To complete this virtuous circle, I used to live in Bath myself, and I have been fortunate to have had the treatment from Eugenie herself. Rich, involving, complex, a sensory masterpiece in my opinion. Anyway, the Tales of Bath treatment is a perfect reflection of a fascinating city, famed for its mysterious waters and its equally mysterious legends, which are picked up in the music and the poetry, the birdsong and the almost subliminal sound of trickling water, by the stories of King Bladud, who legend says discovered the healing springs here after noticing that animals that rolled in the local mud were free of skin diseases, and Sulis, the goddess of the springs, which were named Aquae Sulis by the Romans almost 2,000 years ago. The treatment is a genuinely immersive experience that enables the client, as the Lush website states, to be like the water, still, shapeless, formless, and to seek out the space beneath your feet, boiling high with mineral heat. And to finally arise with a crown set high on your head, contented in all you behold. Sounds too good to be true? Well, I emerge from the treatment feeling rested, restored, and wanting nothing more than to turn around and head straight back into the treatment room to do it all over again. Now, to further set the following interviews in context, they were recorded in Bath, mostly in Richard's garden overlooking the Avon Valley. The Mark and Simon referred to are Lush's co-founder Mark Constantine and Simon Emerson, Lush's musical director. And the Hannah so lauded by all is the brilliant Hannah Rose Lammerman, Lush's spa treatment developer, who on the evidence of this treatment does indeed seem to be channeling something otherworldly. Anyway, on to the conversation, which I began by suggesting to Richard that as he lived in Bath, he would have been familiar with the myths of kings, goddesses, springs and pigs, and therefore the Tales of Bath concept was probably his idea.
No, it really wasn't my idea at
Great
all.
Great start.
It wasn't. And even though I've lived here for 25 years or something like that, it's not something that had really come on my radar. I'd always thought maybe it was a little bit new agey and not the kind of thing that I was so interested in.
Really?
Because I always think of myself as more of a kind of skeptical science person.
Right.
So to look into the myth surrounding the area was an odd one, and it was a typical Mark maverick move, I think, to put somebody out of what they normally would do.
Presumably he thought he was putting you in your comfort zone.
I don't think so. I think he's very good at putting people outside of their comfort zones. And this is something I've noticed in Lush. I mean, I feel the same way, that people do their most interesting work when they don't know what they're doing. And as you learn, you make interesting random mistakes, and those random mistakes put you into interesting areas.
Yeah.
And so when you think you know what you're doing, actually you're just doing the same thing over and over and over again, and that's not interesting. But what is interesting is not knowing what you're doing. So I think Mark does that as a general approach in his company, where he'll take people that aren't comfortable doing the thing that he's got them, you know, the task that he's
presented. Very interesting tactic.
And I think it's a good one. Anyway, I thought, well, great, I've got nothing else to do, and that sounds fun. And also, it was a chance. Often I've done these things in collaboration with Simon, and Simon was saying, oh, this is one you can just do on your own. And I thought, oh, well, great, that sounds really good. And I didn't really know where to start, so I went to see my mother-in-law, who is part of the kind of old school Bath. I don't know what you would, well, how would you describe not New Age mood. She's
no,
not New
she's
Age.
She's more pagan.
She's more, yes. And I knew she, Bath used to be much more interesting in these kind of fringe areas. Now it's become very, it's become moneyed and...
Yeah, I used to live here in the 80s. And when you said pagan, that really struck a chord. There's a lot of interesting people around.
It was much more like Glastonbury, I think, during the 80s and 90s, and there was much more fringe culture went on. So these people are still here, but they've moved out to the edges, or they've moved out to Frome, or they live in the surrounding areas. So I went looking for some of these old Bath characters, and she pointed me at a lady called Annie, who lives down her road, who tells the story, the bladed story, and she told it well. But she alighted me to the fact that there are many different versions of it. All I knew about was the pig story, and I didn't realise quite how deep it went. And I didn't know where to start, but Annie said to me, you need to go to the water and talk to the water. And I just thought, right. You know, that, what does that mean?
I wish I could describe the sort of sceptical look that's across your face at the moment.
But then I went and talked to some other people, Caroline being one of them, and I think you said the same thing. And then another friend of mine, who's a friend of a friend, I saw him on the street, who I knew, who's a local poet, and I know he knew about the myths, and he said the same thing. So four people, I think, in total said, go and talk to the water.
How did you find that? Well, I presume you did it.
Well, what I did, there are two places where the water is most apparent. One is in the Roman baths, and it's called the King's Bath, I think. There's a tunnel where it all runs off and goes down to the river, and it's particularly noisy. Yeah. And that was one place, but I went there and it was surrounded by tourists, and that didn't really work. And then I went to another one called the Cross Baths, which is part of the, what do they call the baths now, the ones, the commercial ones?
You mean the ones they redeveloped it?
Yeah, the redeveloped one at much expense to all the local taxpayers that cost millions.
That's obviously really hit a chord with all of us who live near Bath. We're obviously fully involved with that.
Bath Spa project, or, I don't know.
Anyway, there's a big kind of touristy project where there's a big bath that's on a rooftop and tourists go there and look. And then outside that, there's a little tiny bath called the Cross Baths. And that's open air. It's on the ground floor. It has kind of ancient walls around the outside. And I think Caroline had said to me that that's good place. Yeah. I mean, what do you know? What did you know about that?
Well, I used to run a full moon women's circle. Uh-huh. It's completely on the other end of the scale.
Yeah.
And we used to go there and do rituals.
Yin and yang, you two.
Exactly.
Really.
We used to go there and do rituals, especially leading up to the time when the spa project was happening, because actually the spirits of the water were getting very cross, which sounds far-fetched, but actually they were. I didn't like what was going on there, which is why most of the spa projects haven't worked, because people weren't in tune with the waters. But in a way, what's happened is they've diverted it and they've put chemicals in it, and it's quite horrendous. And I think a bit like the people of Bath, I feel like the waters are kind of doing other things. They're not quite so interested in being in the bar project in Bath.
But why then did you point me at the Cross Baths? You
the
must still think that it's good.
Cross Baths still seems to have some of the original energy there, which is why we used to do our rituals there. It's a little bit away from everything else. But then there are also the springs. The closest place to the original spring that you can get public access is up in Chalcombe at the church we were going to take you to.
Right, which isn't very far from where we're sitting, actually.
No, it's not at all far. And you can still hear the water divas are still definitely there.
Well, you don't think they're there at the Cross Baths?
They're at the Cross Baths, but I know for certain that the water spirits aren't happy with what's gone on in Bath. You know, they've pumped chemicals into them and they've made it into that kind of project. And if you go to the Bath Spa project, it's okay, but it's not magical. Whereas the Cross Bath still has something.
Come, waters of life, here you give birth, flowing through our veins, blood to the earth. We wait in the wings. In
I went along in, it was January time, it was quite cold, and you're outdoors, and I sat there, and you pay, as a local resident, I think I paid £9, and the bath, it's tiny, and I sat there on my own, in the freezing cold, and because it's cold, the water steams in this really quite strange way.
Yeah, yeah.
And the steam looked like it had a will. I was looking at it, and these little whirlwinds of steam were kind of going around and making ghostly little figures, and I was thinking, what am I imagining here? And then I just sat, and I'm not much of a meditator, and after about an hour in there, I started getting some kind of sense of something that was going on there, and I was letting my imagination go with it. And then I left afterwards, walked home, and there was a very specific feeling that had come over me from being there, which was quite lethargic and quite kind of opiated, is what I felt. I felt kind of drugged and in a bit of a stupor and very tired, and it didn't give me energy at all. It was more putting me to sleep in a way that I think it's like, go to sleep and then you'll feel better when you wake up.
It's fascinating.
Well, this became the approach to the piece, for as far as I was concerned, of how it would be something that put you to sleep to feel better when you came out. I'd always wanted to do a spoken word piece, because when one of my first musical experiences was my mum always used to put on the Richard Burton recordings of Under Milk Wood, and so that was a real formative musical experience for me. Just the sound of those voices was incredibly musical and atmospheric and magical, I thought. So that's something that I'd always wanted to do for a Lush treatment, is have a spoken word thing. So I started looking for somebody to tell the story, and I was asking Caroline's opinion. Who do you think I should get? And then I suddenly thought, well, surely Caroline should do it. And within 2 days, I think she'd done it.
Really?
It was out of my comfort zone completely, even to write the story. But it all felt so magical. My daughter suddenly was away for the whole weekend, and I never get time like that. And I literally spent the whole weekend and the week before researching, but the weekend writing it, and it really felt like it just flew out. And the very last bit, very near the end, when the goddess speaks, Sulis speaks, I fell asleep, and it sounds... But anyway, I woke up, the sun was just setting, and I wrote the last bit, and it really felt like somebody else wrote it. It was like, ooh, it's made me go all kind of goosebumpy.
And was restored as Prince Bloodud. He turned to thank the woodsman, whose true nature was revealed. Princess Sulis of the fairies. And in gratitude, he kneeled. Rise up, Bladud of Britain, for your journey has been long. Humility recovered, to your land you now belong. Tend well my healing waters. Build a house around them, please, so all may come who suffer and be free of their disease. Sense of peace he carried home. He honored well the water, and in gratitude he oft would sing to thank the Fey King's daughter.
You can sit and watch water tumbling over a stone for hours. I mean, there are whole gardens in Japan, aren't there, that are just that rhythm and the sound of water. And water is magical. That's obviously something you felt, Richard, when you were...
Yeah.
Or maybe not magical, but it certainly affected you from what you were saying.
Well, I'm very interested in... The whole idea of magic became part of the project, and the confusion between magic and science that turned out to be quite a central part of the King-Bladed story. Is because he established the first university of magic and science at a place called Stanton Drew, 8 miles out of Bath, which was a stone circle. And I've often looked at the aims of what we think of as magic and science and kind of think, well, what's the difference? I mean, if I showed an iPhone to my dad, who's died 20 years ago, that wouldn't make any sense. It would just look like magic. And the fact that a surgeon started to be able to cure somebody at the end of the 19th century would seem like witchcraft to somebody from the 14th century. Mm. So,
but I also think that quantum physics is now proving mysticism and almost going beyond lots of people's ideas of religion. And that's actually proving that by the, you know, the power of observation and how amazing that can affect things. And I think that's happened with us in the sense of there's been a sort of very lovely interplay between the masculine and feminine energies in this project. And magic and science have kind of come together.
So I know it's strange, and it's quite difficult to explain for myself, is that I didn't know what to expect when I went in for the treatment. I've read about it. The more you start to think about it, the more you realise that it's working on so many different levels, and there's so much thought gone into it that, you know, you might go in there thinking, well, what really counts is the massage, or what really counts is the fact that it's dark and it's relaxed, and the music is something else going on at the same time. But they work together so well. And there is something happening inside of you. I'm actually convinced of it. I'm glad I'm not having to explain it. You're doing a great job. But...
Well, we did work very closely with Hannah from Lush, who she creates the actual massage. And she really worked closely with the music and with the lyrical content.
So which comes first then? The idea and then the music and then how the massage will fit that? Or
what came first in this instance is that I'd imagined the structure and what would happen inside it. So I kind of had a shape in my head, which it didn't turn out to be. But we'd start with spoken word and tell the story, and then we'd go into a massage treatment. And there was a very specific point in the massage treatment where I'd imagined this hero figure coming, and that would be the high point of the massage, and then finish with spoken word again. And that was so... That's where we started. So when Caroline wrote the story, we recorded that, recorded 45 minutes worth of music without any reference to massage, and then handed that in, and then just waited. And then it just seemed to be... It filtered through, just carry on, do your thing. And that's when Hannah started working on the massage. Caroline worked very strictly with me, I think, in making sure that the music always served the purpose of the massage. Because I think in all of the treatments I've done with Lush, worked on with Lush before, sometimes the music becomes just wrong for a massage. Sometimes it becomes about the music, there's loud drums, it just takes you out of your kind of healing space, which is what something I was very keen that this massage worked as something that made you feel better when you came out. Caroline was very strict with me of making sure that the music was never something that wasn't going to work for that healing aspect.
Well, that's partly because I was a therapist anyway. And so the idea of being in a very relaxed state and having music that was very jarring or staccato at the wrong moment would just literally pull you out.
Yeah.
And then also there'd be a part of your consciousness going, shut the bloody music up. I really didn't want that.
And there really isn't.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear
until
that.
Right at the end when there's a repeat of that very slow piano, and then you suddenly think, oh, no, It must be near the end. I don't want it to stop. And then, no, there's nothing jarring at all.
I remember when I was in training, having heard one of the trainers saying, I promise you at one point it will feel like second nature, I promise you. And at the time I was feeling like so overwhelmed. I was like, it will never happen. But after 1 year in the spa, I can tell you, and all the future therapists hearing this podcast, yes, at one point it becomes second nature. Absolutely. It's part of you. You just relax in the whole experience of providing a treatment.
Now, I'd had one of your treatments, and I didn't get the feeling you were performing without thinking about it. You put a great deal of effort and energy into each treatment, don't you?
Yes, you do. And here at Lush, we are working with routines. However, I was thinking about that this morning, preparing my room for my clients later on. Although we are working with routines, it's always different. There's always a different feel in the room. You're always with a different person. You are always a different person. There are days where you are very energetic, and there are days where you are more like contemplative. And so it's always the same, but it's never the same, if it does make sense. But there's always this dimension of like putting the effort there. It's like, yes, it's quite physical, obviously. And it's like intellectually demanding, as surprising as it sounds, maybe. So that's...
I don't think it is surprising because, it was about an hour and a half that the Tales of Bath, and you were doing a lot of different things and almost like you're trying to share in with their experience. I mean, that is demanding.
Yes, when I was training as a massage therapist, one of my teachers was used to say that it's a 50-50 journey. You are providing something to the client, but you want to meet the client in the middle. So the client has to feel special, and there you can create the space for something unique. And it doesn't matter if it's always the same routine you are performing. And I see it from my point of view a little bit like a dance. Again, it has to do with my background as a ballet dancer, but we are working with soundtracks, and it's a very, very, very important part of our treatments always. So my way to know my treatment and perform it well is to work closely with the soundtrack and to match my moves, could be my massage moves or my moves, you know, with my body's, my steps to the music, and then suddenly you kind of reach a different dimension which the client can feel. Definitely.
Oh, for definite, yeah. There's a part of, we should talk about the Tales of Bath treatment specifically, but I was going to ask you about your background in dance, because there is a part where you were doing these beautifully balletic, graceful movements. I mean, this is a very physical treatment for you as well, isn't it?
It is. Obviously, being a massage therapist, you train to use your body in the best possible way, to provide the best possible quality of touch to your client. And Tales of Bath is definitely quite a physical treatment. And it's a very flowy one. We are working a lot with the idea of water, of the femininity, of the goddess spirit. So it's very soothing, and it has to flow from the beginning till the end. So you don't want to break this feel during the treatment. Definitely not. Yeah,
that's very true. Everything you do keeps the client in the moment. Yes. And I suppose if you were to do something, in quotations, wrong, the client would be taken out of that mood, even fractionally, and that would change things.
It's about holding the space for the client from the beginning till the end of the treatment and performing in the best possible way, which means that sometimes, you know, you're doing mistakes. Sometimes, oh, you forgot one move. And the idea is just like to keep this flow going on. And it doesn't matter if you know that something went slightly wrong as the therapist, as long as the feel is still there, you can keep the client in this space where there's no wrong, basically.
Yeah.
To be honest, if you forget one move, it's not the end of the world.
No,
what's really important is to hold the space. Yeah. That is the most important.
Eugenie, a treatment like this is very complicated. You're the person that's going to have to give this treatment. So how much input in the planning stages do you have?
Well, that's an interesting question. What happened is that Hannah is designing our treatments, and she has a very amazing, magical, beautiful, organic way to design treatments. And then when it was almost done, like the routine was almost done, she came to us. And although the routine was almost finished, it gave this perspective, I imagine, to Hannah to receive it and see it performed by someone else. And at this time, the music was not even completely done yet. So we still worked with the music at that stage, but we didn't have the choirs recorded, or that was like a very, very, very advanced draft, but not the final version. So we kind of like began learning at this stage. And I would say my input was like quite subtle. I think I just gave this opportunity for Hannah to see her work and kind of polish it. You know, I was this kind of mirror person for her to be able to make it the best possible routine and the best possible treatment overall. And obviously, working with the music and the affinity I had with the music, we managed to polish the thing in such a way that almost every move matches the music, and I would dare to say every step we are doing as therapists around the couch could match the music.
So you put together the moves before the music was finished.
Yes.
I assume you're working on a draft of the moves as you're listening to a draft of the music, and then the two come together. I hate to say magically, but it kind of feels that way in this room.
We can call it magic. There's so much magic in our treatments anyway. Yeah. So we like to say that's magical. So let's use this word.
Sure,
like, shamelessly. It is magical. This treatment is very magical. I think everyone put a lot of efforts and personal experiences and sensitivity in the different parts of the treatment. And I think everyone respected everyone else's work. Like a lot. So when I appeared quite late in this like development process, and I heard Hannah talking about the routine, and I saw her perform, and I felt her performing it on me, and I heard the music, you have to be respectful. It's just like, it was so beautiful, and these people are clearly channeling something from somewhere else. I couldn't tell you, but like almost another dimension. You've got that in your hands, and you are the direct provider at one point of this beautiful treatment. It's so inspiring. It's so beautiful. It's just like, it's the minimum you can do, just like putting much respect and channeling the beauty yourself, you know, for your client. It's very easy with such material. It's extremely easy, to be honest.
The whole idea of the massage, unlike other spa treatments I've read about where you're meant to come out feeling beautiful or you're meant to come out feeling younger, this is changing your mood. This is lifting you out of yourself, putting you somewhere else, giving you space to think. You obviously craft the words and you craft the music. Are we supposed to concentrate on the words? Are we supposed to hear it? Are there times when we're just falling asleep and we're not hearing anything?
I think that in a good meditation, you can actually go into an altered space and not be aware that you're listening, but that you are listening. And sometimes that's the most receptive state, where you're very present, but you're not awake.
No.
It's different from being asleep. And in a way, I think it's the most receptive state you can be in.
Because I remember it being over and coming out and going, we arrived here 2 hours ago.
Where have I been?
And yet, when I played back the CD that I borrowed from Lush, I had actually heard it all. Like you say, it had gone in somewhere.
It's taken in by another part of your awareness.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah.
I suppose so. There's lots of snatches of birdsong in there. That's sort of like a Lush signature, isn't it, to put in birdsong?
The first one I worked on with Simon was called Synesthesia, and I think that kind of set the style, the overall style of the music for these pieces. And Mark's bird recordings were a really successful part of that, I thought. And equally, in work that I've done with film music before, I've used bird song a lot before, where time stretching it and pitching it down, and that's something I'm used to doing. It was part of the style. It's something that I know Mark enjoys, and it's something I enjoy, and Simon's a big birder. And on this particular treatment, the wren song was what it was all about. And I don't know whether you noticed, but there's what Ro thought was the clangers. It was actually the wren down 8 octaves, I think, way.
I was
down.
Trying to work out what that was.
Yes.
It almost sounded like you'd reversed a cuckoo song or something.
No, it's wren down an awful lot. And it turns out that it's very melodic and expressive. The was my favourite bit of this treatment, is that Wren song. And it does get used a lot throughout the piece. Because the Wren represents, you know, the Wren is seen as the king of the birds, and it very specifically represents the king-bladed figure in the piece. And so that's why it repeats throughout. That was another theme, the thing that we're talking about, the tension between male and female. When I first went to Caroline to talk about it, it was all about the goddess. That's just what it was. No, it's about King-bladed. No, it's about the goddess. No, it's about King-bladed. No, but you don't understand. It's got to be about King-bladed. What's he got to do with anything? It's just, it's the goddess. That's what it is. So there was that battle goes
bladed
on.
Bladed versus Sulis.
Well, and I think that's what the piece has ended up being about, is about this kind of strange love affair that goes on between King-bladed and Sulis. Because he goes down to the underworld to tempt her into the job of looking after the hot springs and tending the hot springs. So at one point in the piece, it's the kind of love scene where King-bladed has gone down into the caves, singing into the darkness, hoping for her to arrive, and she does arrive.
That's a beautiful song, though.
And then there's a little bit of
beautiful.
I think of it as a kind of, it's the sex scene.
Right,
okay. Kind of breathy silence.
I have so got to go back and have a drink again now and talk to you.
So yes, that's what it turned out to be, I think, was a love story. It's a love story about Sulis and Bladed, and about that kind of tension between the male and the female.
As artists, then, as creating this, is it important for you that people who go to have this treatment interpret the words like this, that they understand it, or do you accept that they may not?
I think of it like a tapestry. It's so many elements are woven in and out, and some people will appreciate some of the colours and some of the threads, and other people will find others. And it doesn't really matter. It's there anyway, almost wrapped around them like a mantle, and they'll make of it what they will. We kind of let go of that once it's done. I also think that Bladed, his story is actually like the hero's journey, and that's also an important part of it for me that I came to afterwards, because I was much more in the realm of the goddess for such a long time. So that's been quite healthy. We've morphed a little bit in that way, haven't we?
Yeah.
On the day that we recorded some of the story, I asked if we could go at dawn to the Chalcombe spring. And we went there, we got there in the dark, it was early, it was cold, and we heard the owl from the night, and then we heard the dawn chorus build, and then we recorded some of the story. And then we came back here and had some breakfast, and we just magically ended up going upstairs to Richard's studio and writing our first piece together, because we hadn't written anything together before then. So that was really magical.
And then suddenly it was written.
And it was done. And it was like, wow, that was so easy.
It was an easy piece to do, really. The only difficult bit was when it was this difficult decision I'd had about where to record all the orchestra when we'd wanted to do it underground. And then I got to Budapest where we recorded it, the actual music, and it was all a complete nightmare. Not by any fault from the people. Just we had technical problems. Just everything was going against it. And that's my only regret about the piece, that I should have found a way to have recorded the music underground.
How did you put together the team that eventually you used, Richard? Because there's an awful lot of people involved in this.
Well, there's not actually that many.
There's not
that many musicians.
And that's how it sounds when you listen to it.
Most of it is Caroline and I, really. But there's one song, two folk songs, which were included because I read a book called The Waters of the Gap by a very important man to the project who is called Bob Stewart. He is a really interesting composer and musician and academic that knows a lot about the myths surrounding Bath, who used to live above the Roman baths in Bath. He had a flat there. But the Cutty Wren, that came from his book. So it was Bob Stewart that suggested the Cutty Wren, and I got Jackie Oates to come in and sing that. And then there was Dean Broderick, who did the orchestral arrangements. That was the core team, really. So yeah, not that many. Oh, and then a fantastic young poet.
Toby Thompson, yeah.
Toby, yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
I was saying before we started recording, actually, his voice, there's something about it that brings me to tears.
Sounds like a young stoner, doesn't he? Just this kind of... It's a funny voice that you wouldn't associate with such beautiful poetry, I think. He comes from rap and hip-hop, I think was what he used to do, and now he's suddenly doing this highfalutin, beautiful poetry. And we really got lucky. I mean, I got so lucky with Caroline doing such a great job with the story and Toby doing such a good job with the poem.
Here the water runs so that we don't have to. Hot like a noon sun, eastern desert ray, 1.3 million litres every day. Here the water flows so that we can just be still for a short while. There is nothing needs doing. Discussing, reviewing, interrupting, resuming. Your life is nothing more or less than a shallow sunlit stream cruising towards its rightful natural shimmering home, the ocean. Here the water washes away. Any fears that we might have of loss and decay, it's a weird world, no doubt. This planet is as odd as a play, in which the actors are the audience. Nobody knows their cues. The ticket price is a fistful of blossom. The stage is made of nature plus concrete. And when people cry encore, encore, mothers give birth.
Heard you was at the Lush managers meeting, and you came on this stage, and it was a massive place.
It was
almost
really
like a
big
stadium, wasn't it?
It was really big.
Hundreds and hundreds of people.
They just hadn't made that clear in the email when I was invited to go and do it. I can't remember the wording they used, but I had a very clear sense that it was going to be like a meeting, basically. I thought it was going to be a room, like a little presentation to maybe like 9 people.
And sort of like a whiteboard. And
yeah, exactly. I saw the whiteboard in my mind as I was looking forward to it. Yeah, it was quite something.
Because I didn't know anything about you then, I had this feeling you were all kind of very tight and you kept your arms down and you looked almost vulnerable.
Yeah. And also, I think the poem slightly requires that. It's like that poem, maybe more than anything else I've written, it's like really not about me. Well, it's not about me. It's not about me doing this kind of existential like searching and trying to like define myself as a human being and find my place in the world. It's broader than that.
Was it easier to switch styles to write something like that? When you're on, I guess they had to really explain what the commission was all about.
Yeah, I had a lot of kind of like research given to me, a lot of stuff to do with the pagan mythology around the natural hot springs here. Initially, I didn't really make any progress with it. Then I got back to Bath and actually had a meeting with Richard, and he gave me a deadline after months of procrastinating. And
that sometimes helps.
It really helped.
And I focuses your thoughts.
Yeah, yeah. It just came in like 3 days. 3 days of a bit of craft.
Were you thinking at the time, well, people are going to be hearing this all around the country over and over and over again, I have to adapt my style or I have to do this? Or did you just think, well, they've asked me to do it, they must like what I do, just go for it?
I didn't think of lots of people, but I definitely thought of like one person in this situation. They're like, part of the brief was that a lot of the treatment, a lot of the stuff that you hear while you're having it is very kind of, it doesn't really acknowledge the harder parts of life. It's so sheltered. It's like being in a womb or something. Yeah. And initially my piece was going to be the one that kind of reintroduced you to the world and was like slightly rousing. You can go out and kind of take the world
That's
by the horns a little bit.
Because it appears much earlier than that, isn't it, now?
Yeah, now it comes in almost at the beginning.
Yeah.
But that was nice because I could find that those two things like tugging against each other, like balancing light and dark and kind of happiness and sadness and like the intrinsic loss as well as gain, like life and death. That's what gave the piece legs, is that those two things were communicating with each other throughout it.
Perhaps I shouldn't say this, but I must admit, when I heard you on stage in Bournemouth when I first heard it, and I've had the treatment, whether it's because I was letting myself go, I actually got tears in my eyes listening to it. There was something in the way you were speaking it. Was that a conscious thing? Did you have to look for, in quotations, a voice in which to read that out, or did it all come very naturally?
No, I think that came quite naturally. I actually performed that poem at a funeral, and I hadn't really clocked until I did it how, like, apposite that would be for that situation. I didn't know the guy who had died that well. I kind of knew the family that he'd married into, and I did this poem, and like everyone was crying, and his best friend was like this huge guy, came up and just like gave me this huge hug and thanked me, and his mum came up to me and said, I just want to say that it had been really great to hear me do that, and then was like, by the way, I'm his mother.
I guess it's true, tomorrow lives at the cost of today. Winter becomes spring, like blonde into grey, like June swallowing May, like moons growing and shrinking. What is it all for? I haven't the loneliest inkling. Life can be so unforgiving. I suppose at least we're not alone in our living. I suppose at least a lot of things. Cue the melancholic strings. It's a long life, it's a short life, sure is. Miserable, joyful, demanding, vast. It's a cold world, it's a hot world.
Incredibly touching.
It's great when you do something and it's actually like touches something, if it can like soothe someone and help them with what they're dealing with.
I think anything that brings those emotions to the fore and allows you to feel them, it does help. It is soothing. To switch away, have you had the massage treatment yourself?
Yeah.
You've heard yourself speaking it, right?
Yeah.
How did that feel?
it felt great. I mean, I was getting a massage. It was very surreal. It was very surreal and very pleasant.
I wonder what you thought when you were first approached. It was something completely different to what you normally do.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting to be given a commission and be given some parameters to work within, because most of what I write just kind of driven by me to be taken out of yourself and given a context to work within, which is kind of more far-reaching, or just like, yeah, it's a nice thing to have happen.
Have you the strength to be humbled today, to let your surrounding defenses all crumble away into nothing, and no when and no where and nobody knows how, but we will all get there wherever we're headed.
I wish I'd had a chance to listen to this interview before I'd gone in.
Well, I think that was a little problem that we had at the beginning when the initial testings happen and some of the Lush members of staff come in and try it. I think there was a general feeling of, we have no idea what this is about. And so that's why there are kind of booklets and explaining bits and people are trying to explain what the blinky blimey is going on in the whole thing. And I think that has been a struggle. And sometimes people are saying, well, what's that poem got to do with anything? Or what really happens in this story? We don't really understand it. The fact that it's not all prescriptive and obvious and on the page, that's what, for me, what makes something artistic. When you've got space to move and imagine something, you don't want to be banged over the head with the actual meaning. You're supposed to find it for yourself, and you should be allowed to find it for yourself. And yes, sometimes with this treatment, I've had it a few times now, sometimes it works for me and sometimes it doesn't.
You are able, though, to step outside of the fact that you created the music and still take part in the process.
I think that's one of the things that's good about being old, is that you have to learn in a creative process to be able to step outside of it, and that's a really hard thing to do. I think when I was younger, I really couldn't do it. I couldn't see the wood for the trees ever. You know, I was always busy worrying about the hi-hat part or whether the bass part is in tune or whatever.
Right.
And really, that doesn't matter. thankfully, we've had Caroline here, who's very good at that, stepping outside it and making sure that its function and it's the service that we're trying to provide is at the forefront of the piece, a service for people. We honestly want to make them feel better. That's what we were working towards, that people will feel better when they walk out from having gone in.
The more present you are, the less likely you are to be thinking about all the things that aren't important. So even if you start off like that, hopefully by the end of the treatment, you'll come out and you'll be more spacious and more empty to be able to appreciate the present moment and your life and all the gifts of life that we sometimes take for granted.
I didn't want to come out at all. You come up the steps from the treatment rooms and suddenly it's daylight and there's people everywhere. I could have just stayed in that space the whole day and just, it was fantastic.
My favourite line is of Caroline's, a space everywhere, no one to be. And I love that, this idea of not having to be anybody, having a holiday from being yourself, even if it's just an hour. And that, to me, is the important thing about this, is just don't have to bother thinking about all that crap that I normally think about and try and let all that noise go. And that's what the music is trying to do, is to quieten that noise, I think.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good to meet you.
Thank you.
Sorry, it's felt a bit chaotic and random, but I hope that was it.
That's part of it.
That's awesome.
Richard Evans and Caroline Crawley with Eugenie Couture and Toby Thompson. And we'd like to dedicate this podcast to the memory of Caroline, who died just months after these interviews were recorded. Thank you very much indeed for listening. If you'd like to treat yourself to the Tales of Bath Spa treatment, it can be ordered through the Lush website. And if you'd like to hear more Lush programmes and podcasts, and our ever-growing archive contains conversations and interviews with a wide range of charities, organisations and individuals, please download the free Lush Player app, which is available for both Android and Apple.